Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 8, entitled The Lord Slays the King of the Demons, text number 18. Sasatvamenam parito vipasya.
Sasatvamenam parito vipasya.
Stambasya majat anunir jihanam.
Stambasya majat anunir jihanam.
Nayam rigo napi naro vichitram.
Nayam rigo napi naro vichitram.
Aho kimetan rimiginda rupam. Hiranyakasipu, the king of the Daityas, Satvam, living being, Enam, that, Parita,
all around,
Vipasya,
looking,
Stambasya,
of the pillar,
Maja,
from the midst,
Anunir Jihana, having come out,
Na,
not,
Ayam,
this,
Mrigaha,
animal,
Na,
not,
Api,
indeed,
Narha,
human being,
Vichitram,
very wonderful.
Aho,
alas. Kim,
what?
Etat,
this.
Nrimriga Indra Rupam,
the form of both the man
and the king of the beasts.
The lion.
Translation. While Hiranyakasipu looked around, all around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either a man or a lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakasipu wondered, what is this creature that is half man and half lion? Purport. A demon cannot calculate the unlimited potency of the Supreme Lord, as stated in the Vedas, parasya shakti vividaiva shruyate svabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. The different potencies of the Lord are always working as an automatic exhibition of his knowledge. For a demon, it is certainly wonderful that the form of a lion and the form of a man can be united. Okay, let's put this here. Oops. One sec, where was I? No. I have to just find it. United, where was it now? United, all powerful. Okay. For a demon, it is certainly wonderful that the form of a lion and the form of a man can be united, since a demon has no experience of the inconceivable power for which the Supreme Lord is called all-powerful. Demons cannot understand the omnipotence of the Lord. They simply compare the Lord to one of them. Avajanati mammuda manusim tanavasritam. Mudas, rascals, think that Krishna is an ordinary human being who appears for the benefit of other human beings. Param bhavam ajananta. Fools, rascals, and demons cannot realize the supreme potency of the Lord. But he can do anything and everything. Indeed, he can do whatever he likes. When Hiranyakasipu received benedictions from Lord Brahma, he thought that he was safe, since he received the benediction that he would not be killed either by an animal or by a human being. He never thought that an animal and a human being would be combined so that demons like him would be puzzled by such a form. This is the meaning of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipotence. Naham prakasa sarvasya yoga maya samanvitaha. I become covered by my illusory energy. Therefore, it will not be possible for the demons to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demons by nature are limited by their preconceived ideas, limited by all those ideas they have, and therefore there is no God. That is obvious. Right? That is obvious. And there are just different entities within the universe who have powers, like we do. Like we do. Same. And some have more power. Some are very powerful. Some are less powerful. And we are powerful. Undoubtedly. Therefore, it's the demigods that is our problem. And they are somehow or other envious of us. Yes. We are asserting our natural authority. Natural. Yes. We are naturally the controllers. Naturally. That's our right, our birthright. Understood. In this way, the demoniac mentality is deeply setting in. And there's no question. For Hiranyakasipu, there was no question that he was in his right, that he was the natural ruler, and that all were simply to be subjugated by him. Therefore, it was not possible to conceive of a supreme controller. That was the first thing. The second thing was, when that Supreme Lord appeared in a form which was unknown, it is said even Lakshmi wasn't able to recognize for sure that Nrisingadev was her husband. What to speak of Hiranyakasipu, who had no qualification to know the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he was trying to figure out what this creature was. Only slowly did it begin to dawn upon him who he was dealing with, when this personality had so much power in a fight. And this personality just had unlimited power, and at the end he was on the lap of that personality, and so on. And then slowly it began to dawn upon him. But still he had some doubt. Even at the moment of death, there was some doubt. So it is described by the Acharyas. And therefore, Hiranyakasipu did not yet attain liberation. He did not yet get fully liberated. He came back again in another demoniac form, because he was not able to fully recognize the Supreme Lord who had actually killed him. So one more lifetime. To be killed again by the Supreme. Of course, all was ordained by a higher plan, right? But Hiranyakasipu became indeed a powerful demon, right? And was extremely demoniac. We can see he tried to kill his son. Not only that, he forced the mother of the son to give poison. And he was so overwhelmingly intimidating that although she didn't want to do it, she did it anyway, because of his extreme power. She couldn't stand up against him. It was a quite nasty personality, what to say. I like to take these things back on ourselves and look at the Hiranyakasipu within. I mean, that is interesting, because we're trying to conquer and rise above the demoniac contamination. All of us have demoniac contamination. All of us have so many qualities that are typical for the demons. Pride is one of them. We are all proud, and we are all therefore ready to block out others. We see someone and think, who does this person think he is? Can we neutrally look upon one? Can we look upon one as a well-wisher? In the Rig Veda, it is stated, let me look with loving eyes upon the entire world, and let the world look upon me with loving eyes. So that's a very beautiful verse, actually. But that's not the case. The evil eye, especially in the Middle East, they are very afraid of the evil eye, that someone looks at us with the evil eye. Yes, so, but it is true. Icchatvesa samuttena dandamahena bharata sarvabhutani samaham sargayanti parantapa. All the living beings in the material world are overcome by the delusion of lust and envy, iccha and dves. We often are so confronted with the fight with lust, that we kind of feel that this is our main problem. But it's not a fact. The first and foremost problem is envy. Because it is envy that causes lust. It is the envy that brings us down. It is the offenses that we make that will bring us down from an elevated spiritual consciousness again to the animalistic platform of cats and dogs, as Prabhupada said. And Prabhupada liked this cats and dogs many times. He would emphasize it. Cats and dogs. Right? Always ready to fight. Always ready to assert oneself. And why not be generous? In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, kripana falahetava. The miser who is thinking himself that all the fruits of all activities and so on are his. And therefore that it has to be his way. It has to be my way. Because it's my world. You know what I'm saying? And people are just infringing upon it. Right? And I will not tolerate. So, we see this flexible nature of the devotees. I think some of you may know my chapatis story, how I was doing service in the restaurant in Vrindavan as the manager. And at that time, I was relatively new. And, you know, there was a kitchen downstairs and the restaurant upstairs. And we had thalis in full plates with sabjis, rice, and chapatis. And in North India, where Vrindavan is, chapatis is a big thing, so there must be chapatis. So it was not easy to be the chapati cook. And there was this, at this point, there was one devotee named Rohini Kumar, a very senior Prabhupada disciple, right, who was somehow or other the chapati cook. Right? And I was I would be upstairs and call down, you know, when the guests would come, 10 chapatis, you know, 16 chapatis, like that. So one day, a group of 25 people come in, right? Indian villagers, and they were like, sit down, and they were like demanding, you know, they are not, they don't treat you nice, you're just a servant, right? You're just a servant, and means like dog or something like that. You know, he just sends you here and there. So they start banging with their cups on the table. Bang, bang, bang. We want chapatis right now. Right? So I got a bit pushed around by them. So I called down to the kitchen, 100 chapatis! You know, four each, 100. So down in the kitchen, there was a little bit of a short circuit, you know. And after a while, these people became very agitated. Where are the chapatis? Where are the chapatis? And there were no chapatis coming. So I call again, where are the chapatis? You know, chapatis! And finally, my chapati cook flew out of the door, and landed in front of me. And on his finger, he had made from chapati dough a joker. And he put it under my nose. And he said, no chapatis. And I was like, no chapatis. And he said, no chapatis. Because the cook just quit. And I had to go back to tell those people, no chapatis. It was tough. And they looked at me like, these foreigners, they don't know what they're doing. They can't even make chapatis. Anyway, it is a fact that I thought about that. And I was thinking, yes, I was too rigid. I was too strict. I was too serious about what I needed, these chapatis. I wasn't human about it. I just wanted 100 chapatis. I didn't consider that there was a human being down there who had to make them, right? And sort of, 100, you know what I mean? I need them now, right? I was just like those people with the cups who were banging on the table. I was in my own way, pushing. And just that joker, you know, he was telling me, lighten up, you know what I mean? Don't be so serious. Why are you so serious about these chapatis? Lighten up, you know, relax. I was thinking, become soft like chapati dough, right? Don't be so hard. Well, I didn't change there and then. I'm not sure how much I've changed, really. Underneath, somewhere deep down, still a rock, you know, but trying to become a bit softer, trying to become more pliable in the hands of the Vaishnavas, trying to oblige as they desire, not just what I want, not just how I think it should be, but, you know, as they think is needed. Of course, up to a point, and then there comes a point where we just have to say, all right, I'm going to take care of myself, which is what I'm planning to do in the coming period, right? Take care of myself. But still, that mood of being a servant, the mood of a devotee, is a mood to be generous. Not just generous with one's possessions, but with oneself. Vaishnav generosity. We are the generous movement. We are the movement of matchless gifts. We are the movement that gives, where everyone gives himself tirelessly. Look at what Prabhupada did. He tirelessly gave himself. All the acharyas tirelessly gave themselves. You know? Worked very hard and just somehow or other, all for the welfare of the world. So this generosity, this spirit, for the happiness of others, for the well-being of others, this is where the demoniac mentality can be overcome. Envy means for me, and who are you? Who do you think you are? I mean, get out of my way before I step on you. Or envy can also be indirect. There's the story of the wolf and the little lamb. And the wolf came to the river, and the wolf was drinking. And then this little lamb comes there and also starts drinking from the river. So the wolf says, hey, who do you think you are to put your filthy snout in my drinking water? You dirty little lamb. Says, no, Mr. Wolf, it is not a problem, because I'm actually drinking downstream from you, so the water doesn't come to you. Now, listen to this. You know what I mean? You are really obnoxious, little fellow. I'm correcting you for your misbehavior, and you talk back to me, right? You know? And last year, you did the same. No, Mr. Wolf, it can't be, because last year I wasn't born yet. Now it's enough. Now it's enough. Now you talk back the second time. For this, I will eat you. So this envy also is there. Not letting people live. Not allowed to live. Yes? You can live here, but you cannot breathe. Okay. You can live here, but you cannot breathe. You can live here, but you cannot be yourself. So Vaishnav means generous. Vaishnav means accommodating. Vaishnav means ready to accept. I mean, yes, we have to change. I know that's news, but we all have to change. What to do? That is necessary. Yes, we have to change, because we're all influenced by so many things, by this icha and dvesa. Right? And that should, this lust and this envy, and that we should acknowledge. It takes time to acknowledge. Of course, we say, yes, of course, I am afflicted by lust and envy. But how deep? How deep? How much have we been afflicted by it? So much so, that we are judgmental, very judgmental, and mental, judgmental, mental, and all these things, because of it. And that has to, it will not just change automatically. Yasyadeva prabhaktiyatasyaita pratikayarta prakasante mahatmanaha. We can say that automatically everything will come in devotional service if we just serve Guru and Krishna. Yes, it is true, but not automatically in the sense that from ignorance we go to full knowledge. Right? We are totally covered and sunk into the lower modes of nature and thick layers of ignorance. And suddenly, one day, the light goes on. And we're suddenly in the mode of goodness and very thoughtful and fully aware and so on. It's not going to happen like that. It's a gradual awareness that is growing. And as we are purified from the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, which make us insensitive, then gradually we're becoming more conscious. What have I been doing all this time? Why did I behave in this way? Maybe I should now make an effort to change. Usually it takes gray hairs before these kind of thoughts begin to emerge. Right? It's there when one really thinks. It takes years. It takes years before we change because we are so stubbornly conditioned. In this way, I wanted to, for a moment, look at Hiranyakasipu as a prototype, within us, right? To where we go on a search for the inner Hiranyakasipu within. That would be, that is wise, that is part of our process, where we reflect. If we look at the songs of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they are interesting in many ways. I mean, he has songs which are glorifying Krishna, remembering Krishna's names, and so on. But he also has another type of songs which are like a catharsis, right? I mean, he went through this kind of process of like embracing his own faults, even beyond, you know, faults that he might have had, but in that spirit, right? I am sinful, I am wicked, I am fallen, I am always like scheming in different ways to exploit others. But he sat down, you know, to sort of and thought about it in that way and wrote it all down. So he threw out all this darkness from within and said, like, I'm saying goodbye to it. I'm saying goodbye to it. That's a catharsis, right, where one says goodbye to all the darkness within one. So we see that that element is there. So this reeks of psychology, right? And we see that there is an element of psychology or a psychological process of consciously correcting one's attitude in Krishna consciousness. It's not the main thing. Anartapasanam saksat bhakti yogam adoksaje. The main thing is to engage in devotional service. And devotional service itself will change us. We will change just by that service. That is the key. But along with it, we also make that conscious endeavor to make the internal change. And we see that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written several songs along that theme. So, we're seeing that ultimately, not only was Hiranyakasipu dealing with the Supreme Lord. In the case of Hiranyakasipu, the confrontation with the Supreme Lord was very dramatical because, the big loud sound and coming out of the pillar and all that. I mean, that's very dramatic confrontation. But we are also facing the Supreme Lord, ultimately. We remember that sarvasya chaham ririsani visto matasmitir gyanam apovanamscha vedaischa sarvaraham eva vedyo vedanta kritvede vid eva chaham. Krishna is in the heart of all living beings and remembrance and forgetfulness comes from him. So, also, as we are getting entangled in all these activities due to ignorance, and as demoniac influences remain, lust and envy remains, and we allow ourselves to be governed by these things, then remembrance and forgetfulness will come from the Supreme Lord. So, just as much as Hiranyakasipu, we're also dealing with Krishna. And we can chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and still Why am I not seeing Krishna face to face? Because we are still having anarthas. Oh, okay, anarthas. Well, then we just keep on chanting till all the anarthas are gone. No, it's also a conscious effort to change. To change. And of course, Krishna in our life will send us different experiences. And they will change us. If we don't, my mother always said something, if you don't want to hear, you have to feel, and then with a raised hand, right? So, said, no, okay, I'm listening. I got it. But that's a universal principle, Krishna also. One Sanskrit word doesn't want to come. So, kusumat apit vatsrap apikature. What would? Soft as a rose and hard as a thunderbolt. Krishna is like that. Krishna can be soft as a rose, very sweet. I was 1 year on a boat with Sachinandan Maharaj and so many people, and then we did a program together. And Maharaj started this whole talk about the sweetness of Krishna and how sweet Krishna is, and then everything was sweet, sweet, sweet. It was so sweet, sweeter than a gulab jamun. It got sweet to a point where, too sweet. Almost. My vicious mind. So when it was my turn, I said, of course, Sachinandan Maharaj just spoke to us about the sweetness of Krishna. But my presentation is actually a question to Maharaj, right? And it's like, you know, I mean, if Krishna is so sweet, right, then why is it that sometimes there are great disasters in the world, and in earthquakes so many people die, or like in wars, like at that time in Rwanda, 3 million people were killed in a very short time. That, or that in the Middle Ages, 1/3 of the world population died of the Black Plague. And I can make the list much longer. So, I asked him, so my dear Sachinandan Maharaj, I am a little confused how Krishna is so sweet. I remember that Maharaj sort of, as a reflex, took the sleeves of his kurta and started to roll them up, you know, kind of, he was getting ready for a fight. Even he is not always sweet. But anyway, they say, some of his disciples say, an iron fist in a velvet glove. In my case, no glove. Just get it as it is. Anyway, but the point, his answer was basically that yes, Krishna is sweet. He is sweet. He may take so many forms. He may even take that ghastly form of the half man and half lion. And in his sweetness, he may even rip the intestines of Hiranyakasipu out of his lower abdomen and hang them as a garland around his neck. Because it is in that form that the Lord is most sweet. Isn't he? He's very sweet because we can understand why the Lord appeared in this form, in this ghastly form, the hot breath of a lion. It's nice to read about it, but if such a personality would be here, we would swallow and feel something uncomfortable in the abdomen, some sort of strange feeling. But Nrsimhadeva is sweet because he appeared out of love for Prahlad. His love for Prahlad was so deep that he took this ghastly form. So ultimately his motivation was not vicious, it was love. And even Hiranyakasipu, he was corrected. He said, well, he was killed in the process. That's all right. That's trivial. That's very trivial. It's not important. If a demon is killed in the process, that's not very serious because, we are eternal anyway. So that was not a problem. He was getting purified and then carrying on. So even that was the sweetness of the Lord, that he ripped out the intestines of Hiranyakasipu. And it was very sweet that he hung them around his neck just to show all the other demons what happens. So it is a pastime which where we need to think. Hiranyakasipu, he didn't have that capacity. But because of hearing from the Vaishnavas and because of hearing from the pure Srimad Bhagavatam, gradually these clouds of ignorance, right? These clouds of ignorance which are filled with lust and envy and greed and anger and other lower qualities, these clouds of ignorance, right, gradually disappear just by that hearing and some transcendental knowledge, which is Visuddha Sattva, which is pure transcendental goodness. Some thoughts of transcendental goodness begin to emerge. Some sense of compassion, some sense of kindness, some sense of actually considering the well-being of other living beings. And just to think like that, right? Instead of thinking, this is my house, and this is my garden, and this is my fence, and who are you to just step into my garden? What's your business here? I don't know you. I remember on Sankirtan, one sometimes experiences these things, because on Sankirtan we are sort of stepping into people's world without first asking. Right? So I'm approaching this man, I'm saying, excuse me, sir. He says, who are you? Who are you to talk to me? I don't know you. Because, my God, it's like I don't have a right to talk to him because I don't know him. And what kind of mentality is this? I mean, he doesn't have just a fence around his house. He has a fence around his head. Incredible. Inconceivable. So Vaishnava is so different. And we know that Srila Prabhupada was known. He was known that he always had time for everyone. Of course, he didn't always have time for everyone because it wasn't possible to always. But at least he had that mood of always having time for everyone. And physically, maybe, there was not always time, what can be said. But he had that mood, and everyone felt that. Even if they didn't get the chance to meet him, they still felt that, yes, but he's open. He's open to meet everyone. Therefore, yes, he's always ready to meet everyone. No fence. Please, yes, come. Please come. Yes, you too. Yes, yes. All welcome. So this is generosity. All welcome. It sounds very romantic, Prabhupada went to New York, Jaladuta, a ship, and two heart attacks, survived it, came to New York, wrote a poem on the eyes on the pier and so on, and then started this storefront, and it already had the name Matchless Gifts, and then sounds start preaching to the hippies, amazing. But then when you look at the videos of the hippies, and then you think, oh my God, imagine if I would have had to live with those people. I've thought like that. I've thought like, imagine if I would have had to live with those people. And I have been a hippie, and Prabhupada never was. Right? But, you know, all that mental baggage, my God, all that confusion, all that, do we have to really deal with that? No, better I close my door, better I get a sign, the dog bites, or just up the hill, there is a house, and next to the door, they have puppets of witches hanging. And it says, beware. It's interesting. I'm going to take a picture of that. just for the blog. So like this. Let us not be witches. Let us not be demons. Let us just take down our defense walls and fences. And let us just be open to others and try to learn to just be generous and appreciate, and in this way develop the mood of a Vaishnava. Thank you very much. Maybe some questions.
Yes. Can you speak about this? On the one side, we should be very generous and very selfless. On the other side, in order to be that, we have to be Krishna conscious. So we may have to some degree, have some defense for sadhana and things like this, how to do that without losing that mood.
Yes. Yes, I'm going to. His question is, picking up on a point which I also brought up in my lecture, that this generosity is there on the one hand, but on the other hand, we have to also take care of ourselves and protect our sadhana and even beyond our health, you know, and put some walls around that to protect. That is true. I also had a sign on my door, please let me rest, I really need it. K.K. Swami. So if there's so before you come to my, you're welcome to my door, but before you come, see if there's a sign on the door. If there is, even if it's a time that other people are awake, do not knock, please. Yes, that is there. So I mentioned it before in the lecture also, that was, I needed to take care of myself, need some territory for myself. So that is there. But still in a spirit of giving ourselves to others. And even then, you know, we are not so rigid. We are not like, we're protecting our space, but then when someone has a real need, they say, oh, okay, come in then. Come in then. What can you do? And there is that general spirit of mercy that, you know, that is there in the heart of a Vaishnava. So Vaishnavas are ready to not only to go to their limits, but just a little bit beyond. And then, but we do have limits, and we have to protect our self, our sadhana, our health, our well-being. I have, in a seminar, I have presented it that in life we are juggling three balls. Huh? So So, you know, three. So there's always one in the air, one you're just catching, and one you're throwing. And the three balls are sadhana, personal well-being, and doing something for the welfare of others. So sadhana, our personal worship of the Lord, that ball needs attention. And then personal well-being, peace of mind, health, and all that, you know, that needs to be there. And then doing something for others. And we're juggling these three balls. So sometimes the ball of personal well-being has been up in the air for a long time. We were out on a marathon and we preached and we just forgot ourselves, right? So we have to catch the personal well-being ball now and give that some attention. And then throw that up in the air again. And now it's time to catch the sadhana ball. So all these things, we keep an eye on them. And sometimes the emphasis is more on personal well-being. Sometimes the emphasis is more on giving. And sometimes the emphasis is more on sadhana. Fortunately, we have a system. And the system is that rising early. This is the Vaishnav system. Because then automatically everything happens. And the trick is to rise before others. The best time is when you're up before everyone else. Because there's nobody to disturb you. It's peaceful and nothing to do but chanting and reading. It's happy time. Early in the morning or early at night. Hey, this is my favorite time. Yeah. So in that way, sadhana is taken care of. Then, you know, Mom was right. She said that the hours before 12 count double. Right? And it's true. If you go to bed early, you are better rested. So the whole system works fine. Early to bed, early to rise, you know, and everything is fine. Sadhana done, enough rest, and plenty of time for the world. In my case, because my health is still not 100%, I got up late today, and as a result, sadhana not done, as a result, no time for the people. And you're all here. On my fifth round, so I'm going to disappear for a while after this lecture to chant my rounds, and then I will again try and make myself available to meet with all of you, because I have a desire to do so. I wish we could do more. That would be nice. But we have to acknowledge our limitations. And yes.
Regarding this question, or the same idea, to deal with flexibility?
Flexibility. It must be to deal with flexibility. Vaishnava must be flexible. It must be very flexible. We should limit the territory where we are not flexible. Yes, I'm not flexible about letting people infringe on my 16 rounds. I'm going to chant them. Just like yesterday during the japa walk, I told someone to please stop talking, right? And to just chant, because it was a japa walk and not a japa talk. So sometimes we're not flexible, but we should minimize that. In general, we should be flexible. Our mentality should be flexible. And only when circumstances do not allow it. We either to protect our self-interest, our sadhana and our health, or to protect the standards of Krishna consciousness. I can be super flexible, but if someone wants to be too flexible and wants to sort of bend the four regulative principles, no, I'm not flexible. They're unbendable. No. But you bend them anyway. All right, I won't kick you out, you know, you still accept it, but let's work on it. Still love you, but meanwhile, you're in the soup. And it's time you get out. We cannot just be flexible. The standards are the standards. So, like this, there's a time to be flexible, a time to be not flexible. So ultimately it takes intelligence. If we're not intelligent, it will be hard, this Krishna consciousness. Fortunately, everyone is intelligent. But we're not used to using it, that's all. Other question? I cannot hear you.
I wanted to ask, does the material world appear in the material world, or does it have its own counterpart?
Say it again, I couldn't hear it.
Does the material only appear in the material world, or does it have its own counterpart?
Yeah. No, it says in that form. In the form of the half-man, the half-lion, he appears only in the material world. And on the Vaikuntha planet, he has a Vishnu form. Yeah, like that. Yes?
So you were talking about, like, we should develop those qualities, like compassion, etc. And let's say we are trying that, but there are sometimes, like, people who are
Yeah. Sometimes we should develop qualities of compassion and so on, but then there are people who are hard and they're abusing it. Then what we do? In such cases, it can be very compassionate to shout at such people and to tell them, back off. You know what I mean? That's very compassionate. Just as Nrsingadeva was very compassionate with Hiranyakasipu. He didn't come like, my dear Hiranyakasipu, you know. No, he didn't step out of the pillar. Oh, Hiranyakasipu, why are you treating your child like this? You know, that's really not nice. So, you can sometimes, out of compassion, take on the mood of Nrsingadeva. But not all the time. should be some balance. Guru does.
Maharaj, in this purification process, we'll start seeing the dirt within us. I'm just worried a little that will be very, very discouraging.
In this purificatory process, we start to see the dirt within us, and he's just a little worried that it's going to be discouraging. Yeah, it's true. Sometimes it's very discouraging. And sometimes devotees, when they're confronted with their own weaknesses and they fall down, they lose faith in themselves. And they just give up. Because they think that, like, I can't be purified. I can't do this. I tried, but I can't. But don't lose faith in yourself. Because Krishna can change us beyond our expectations. The result of devotional service is beyond our expectations. So just stay connected to devotional service. It goes beyond our expectations. So if you keep that in mind, then even if you see so much dirt, just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he is describing that, I am lower than a worm in stool. I am so sinful that anyone who comes in contact with me loses all his pious credits. So, you know, like if you would give those two verses to a psychiatrist, I'm sure they could write an interesting paper about it, you know what I mean? Do an analysis on Krishna's Kaviraj. But it's not just about these two verses. There is the third verse. They come together with the third verse. And the third verse is, then how amazing is it that a personality such as I has received the mercy of Lord Nityananda? So we always look at it like that. We look at it like we see the dirt in our own heart, but we also realize, I got the mercy. I got the mercy. I actually got it. I'm getting it. So let me not run away from this mercy. And somehow not take shelter of the mercy. All right, I see my shortcomings. Let me take shelter of the mercy. And the mercy is so powerful. It will do things to us beyond our expectations. It's amazing. Amazing.
So you said faith in the self, so mean faith in ourselves following the process.
Faith in ourselves that we are able to make it in Krishna consciousness, that we can do it. We lose faith in ourselves that we can do this devotional service. Yes.
Is every wish to Krishna
a dear wish to Krishna? Is everything we wish to do for Krishna, is it dear to Krishna? Krishna appreciates that we are wanting to do something for him. But maybe we want to do the wrong thing. It's just like Dhananjaya Prabhu is describing that when he first met the devotees in London, there were the devotees from America that came and he met them. And he wanted to do some service. So he came back the next day and he brought some eggs. You know, so it's like want to do some service. So ultimately that is not very pleasing to Krishna. The intention, of course, was good, but due to ignorance, the offering was not suitable and not completely pleasing. So if our offering is in the mode of ignorance, it's a little pleasing that the intention is good, but we should make an endeavor to learn what is pleasing to Krishna. So we should not just start wishing, I wish to, offer Krishna electric guitars at Mangal Arati. Samsara. No. But we can also, the way Krishna likes it. Yeah. So, therefore, there is a proper way of doing things, the way Krishna likes it. So we have to learn from the devotees how to serve Krishna. Just also, it's like the other day, someone with the best intentions, with love in the heart, was trying to replace my servant, and I became like the lion came out. Right? Why? Because my servant is trained up and he knows how I like things to be done, right? And then some stranger walks in and starts doing it all wrong, And where is my ginger, and where is my lemon, and where is my this and that, and all these things that are part of my program. So, to serve somebody, we have to learn what the needs are. Only then can we serve. So we must learn how to serve Krishna. Not what we wish, what does Krishna wish? What is his wish? Let us do that. Okay, yes, Prabhu, the last one.
The practice makes perfect. Why is it after a period of time we slack or become cynical or even sometimes lose faith?
Why is it that if practice makes perfect, that after some time we become cynical or we lose faith? It is kind of natural, the natural arrangement in the material world. He's a child, and this child wants to do everything. It wants to do all kinds of things that it cannot do. And if you don't let the child do it, it will. That's the worst thing in the world. The child will scream and so on. Right? And there's always these mothers that carry this kid away because the kid wants to do something they cannot do yet. And at the same time, whenever a kid does something, there's always parents around to say, "Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Can you ride a bicycle? Wonderful, wonderful." Constant confirmation. So this is childhood. You need that hugging, you need that constant, "Oh, you are great, you are wonderful, you are beautiful, you are intelligent, you are this," until you sort of start to believe it. And then the next thing, then you have some self-confidence. And then you go into youth, and you're ready to take on the world, you know. And why don't these old people, these old rusty people, understand, you know what I mean, what to do in the world? "We're going to change the world. Get out of the way, old man," you know what I mean? "We, the youth, you know, give the youth a chance, you know, we will make a better future." Anyway, and then somehow or other, 40 comes and you're no longer growing vertical, but you start to grow horizontal. And you know, and you're not exactly the success you always wanted to be, right? And nobody else is either. And you sort of become a bit cynical. You know, you're looking at it and saying, "Ah, you know, dreamers, you know. I mean, you know, I know what it's really like." And in this way, one becomes cynical. The German writer or literary figure, Goethe, he said, "In childhood, a child is a realist. In youth, one becomes an idealist. In midlife, one becomes a cynic. And in old age, one realizes that actually things are not going on by logic, but that some people are successful although they don't have any talents, and others who have all the talent, still not famous." How is it possible? Because it's not going on by logic, it goes on by some higher arrangement. Therefore it said in old age, one becomes a mystic. Seeing the higher hand of the Supreme Lord. So there's hope for us cynics. There's hope. In old age, right, we can, you know, we might evolve into mystics. I hope it's going to happen sooner than later. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.